What's up, everybody? Brian here. I should apologize that this episode's coming out on Wednesday as opposed to Monday. I know you look for it on Mondays and it didn't show up. And I know that I've been very inconsistent with episodes over the last few weeks. I hope you forgive me. Please know it's nothing personal. Some very quick updates before I give you the episode for today. There will be two more episodes of the now titled Casual Cartoons. I don't know what those are going to be on yet. I have a few things that I'm waiting to hear back from people on, and we'll see where that goes. And then we're going to take a week or so off, maybe 2 weeks, maybe three. We're not sure yet. And then we're definitely now going to launch Welcome to You Are Doom, the Frisky Dingo podcast, which I'm so excited to bring to you. The only host that I can confirm as of right now is Mr. Matt Dykes, who I have not told that he will be the co-host yet because it's funnier just to keep sending him Frisky Dingo gifts whenever he asks, will I be the co-host? So good news, Matt. If you're listening, you will be one of the co-hosts, but I also never said that. And there's no audio proof of it, like the thing that I'm currently recording. But before Frisky Dingo can happen, I really want to finish Venture Bros. I had promised this big blowout finale, and it just didn't quite come together. Matt was going to fly to the States. We're all going to be in the same room. We were going to high five. And then this whole COVID thing happened, and everything took a pause. So I'm telling you now, I can't promise it's going to happen, but I am going to try. I'm going to try to get Brock, Matt, Nick, Graham, me, Chewy, everyone who's ever been on a Venture Bros episode to weigh in on what made doing Venture Bros, the Venture Brothers podcast, so much fun and why I just can't let it go. And I'm still recording things from time to time because it was just the most fun. And I really hope we can bring that episode to you. I've been trying to figure out a way to make it work and it just hasn't quite clicked yet, but I think I have an idea. But like I said, no promises, but I really hope it can happen. Since I wasn't able to record an episode this week, I had to go back to the After the Hype library and think, what would be a great animated film to really sink our teeth into and spend some time diving into with an audience that maybe didn't flock to it or maybe didn't give it a shot when it came out? So I had to go to Kubo and the Two Strings. I like a film which is just a beautifully animated film, wonderfully acted, just fun, kind of scary and kind of sad, but overall just good movie. And I really hope that you guys get a chance to watch it before you listen to this episode, but if not, the episode is still a blast, and I'm really excited to bring it back out of the library and dust it off and show it to a whole new audience. So without further ado, or more rambling from yours truly, please enjoy this After the Hype episode, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Sleeping while my guitar gently weeps. I look at the floor and I see it needs sweeping.
Yes.
All right, so fuck yes, welcome back to the Hype Media Host. As always, Brian Dressel with me, as always, is Jonathan Hardesty.
What?
I haven't done a really fast one in a while. I felt
yeah,
like
no, you
again.
Lost me. I was
perfect. Ryan James.
Hi, Brian. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
No one ever asks. And Chewy Darso.
Hi. Hi.
I was seeing if you were paying attention.
Hi.
You're staring at your phone.
Hi. She's preparing.
She's preparing
at her phone.
Preparing for a different podcast.
No.
Are you looking at a different podcast?
I was looking at that.
There it is.
The podcast that
she's
was
already,
called
she's already jumping
The
ship.
Worst Idea of All Time. And I'm actually
stop intrigued. Plugging this other show. It's not where you are. Yeah. And special guest today is Mackenzie Paikoff. Hi.
Hi.
We've been spending a whole bunch of time with Mackenzie today, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
Whole bunch of time.
Yep. Running, jumping, bouncing.
Saving her while she falls off a cliff.
Yes.
Ooh.
That might have been made out of vinyl.
and air.
Yeah.
Vinyl and air.
In the most dangerous place in the world, Pasadena, California.
Yes, that is definitely the most dangerous place in the world.
Only for your dreams.
Yeah,
it's true. It's very expensive, and it makes me sad because I want to be there.
And parking. It's the worst for parking.
Which is fine.
Okay, so let's move on to the movie of today. As any fan of our show has known, we here at After the Hype are pretty big fans of Laika and Laika's movies. And Laika released a movie this year, so we're going to talk about it. It's Kubo and the Two Strings, which is far and away their least successful movie, which is a little sad. But you got to have a dud every now and then, I guess. Not that I think the movie's a dud, but it didn't do the best. So usually they cross the 100 million mark and make a significant amount of money. This one did not. It got great reviews. I'm not going to bother reading any of them. It was very, very good across the board. It cost $60 million, which is a little bit more than they usually spend, $50 or $55. This one they spent a little bit more, and I think it shows. But then it made a little bit less. It made $69 worldwide. It only made $48 stateside, which is very low.
It's very unfortunate.
It is, and we'll get into why I think that is. I think there's many reasons, and I'm not sure who specifically to blame, but we'll get into that after we do a breakdown. Mackenzie, you excited to do yet another Laika movie breakdown?
I'm a little nervous because this one has a whole lot of plot.
Yeah, this one's there's a lot going on.
There's
in this
a
one.
Lot going on to try to condense 30 seconds, but I will try.
I think you can do it.
I think I can.
I don't think it's impossible.
If you need a quick rundown on the character names, they are Kubo, Monkey, and Beetle.
Beetle. Yes, got that.
Okay,
got
good.
That.
You're getting really close to stealing my quote for this movie.
Good. I know which one not to go with. That.
Okay, you ready to go?
Yes.
Go.
Kubo is a young boy who is on a quest to find three pieces of armor so that he can defeat his grandfather who wants to steal his eye in order to bring him back to the stars with him where he lives because he's a god of some sort. He's on this quest with Beetle and Monkey, who we find out later are really his parents, and they die. But in the end, he defeats his grandfather, who then becomes human, and he gets to have a family again and have a new story.
Okay.
Nice. That was the best one I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was, you used every second, and it worked.
Unrehearsed.
Very nice. Okay, so as is the new custom, you get to not insult me, or you can, but most people don't take me up on it.
Do it.
You get a free shot.
For God's sakes.
Look at him.
Come on, Mackenzie, you know him so well.
Yeah.
You do know me better than the last few people who've had to do this. Like, I don't know.
I'd expect strangers to be unable to work past the awkwardness, but you know Brian. You know his dark secrets.
I don't know. I mean, I would have something to say, but this morning when you said all our friends are assholes, he was the only one who said, no, I'm actually nice.
That's
so
true. Yeah.
Now I feel like I can't insult you. I can insult Chewy, but I can't insult you.
All right.
Be a nice asshole. I love all of us.
What a nice asshole.
That's so all pleasant. I heard. Man, that's a nice asshole. Anyway, so about this children's movie.
Speaking of nice assholes.
I mean, what can I say?
Watching a movie with a monkey walking around, we didn't see any assholes.
That's true.
That's why it didn't do so well in the box office.
Yeah,
it is
not accurate.
It's no Secret Life of Pets as far as assholes go.
Did you see their butts?
Yeah.
Like
you
an
see
actual
a whole
asshole?
Lot
absolutely.
Of, but yeah, because they're always like,
cat
you know, walking
stuff.
Away from you. And you're
I didn't see the movie. So
level.
I thought they might animate the butts out.
No,
they animated the butts in.
That's awesome.
They had a lot of anuses.
Wow.
I actually kind of want to watch it more now.
I don't. I already didn't really want to see it.
No, it's a terrible movie.
I always think about that episode of Bob's Burgers and butts. Oh, anuses.
Yep.
Oh,
so
boy.
How about that Kubo movie?
Cool.
Yeah, that's so here's, okay, the way that you just
anus.
Said that is my biggest problem that it was the main reason why I think this movie failed.
Yeah.
Is that Kubo movie?
Yeah.
That, well, much like it is with all of Laika's history, they can't market their own movies.
Right. They just don't spend the money on it.
Okay,
seems like.
The title alone, I don't think is great.
It's not.
Kubo and the Two Strings. Those two strings, yes, they're important to the plot, but not really.
And you don't understand what it's about. This whole movie, I was like, okay, he's got three strings on his instrument. Where are the two strings?
Right,
is he
exactly.
going to lose a string?
Yeah.
The whole time I'm distracted by, what do the two strings mean? And at the end I go, oh, cool. But
I did not care about the title at all.
The title of the
movie
is something that makes
like
you go, oh, cool, at the
see.
End of it.
I don't know why. I just didn't care.
Like, if Star Wars didn't go to space till the end of the movie, it would have been a bummer.
Yeah.
See, when the first time I saw this back in theaters when it came out, the second I I mean, I just clued into the same voice actor for Monkey and the mom.
Uh-huh,
that I went, oh, okay, so the parents are the two strings.
Right.
I mean, it didn't take me to the end of the movie. It was just like, oh, I get it. It kind of made sense to me. I mean, especially because they turned the one hair strand into a string. I'm like, oh, okay. That's
but that was the end of the movie.
No, it's right away. It's right after
the
he,
first one.
Right when he gets taken away to the snowy land, he grabs a strand of her hair.
Rips her hair.
Right.
Yeah.
And
she
Monkey
turns it into a bracelet.
Yeah, and that's.
But that's not a string on the guitar.
It depends on how clever you are.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah,
okay.
I get it.
You just meant it was string.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So
the thing I think held this movie back is two-sided.
Okay.
In my opinion. So
no, you mean held back like quality or held back like audience?
People seeing it, okay. Audience. First, you have a movie that is called Kubo, which is not a white name. It's not an American name.
Okay, tell that to Moana.
That's true. That Moana's cleaning the fuck up right now.
it's not Disney, all right?
Yep, that's
number
true.
Two.
So that's
perfect.
Number two.
Yeah.
And it's very Asian. It's and so it's like they really specifically Japanese. They really rooted it in this culture, so that can put a lot of people off, honestly, because they might even think
they
it's a foreign
just
film
think it's an
or
anime.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they might think that's
and
like
then
a
Japanese and then
anime
when
film.
You go past that, then you go into the other side about like, okay, so maybe this will appeal to an Asian audience, but then you cast all white people.
Yeah,
and then you have the one, oh my, from George Takei, which is cute, but. It's like a token thing. You have a token Asian guy in a movie about Asian people.
Well, there are two. That helps, but there's two.
A lot of the villagers are voiced by Asian people, but they're all like just background random things that you don't even pay attention to. It was such a weird choice. I mean, it's a white director with a white cast. And it's so, like, in a way, it's almost Asian fetishism. I can't say that word right now.
I would disagree. I don't think it's fetishism.
No, I know it's not an actual fetishism, but it's all like... that weird reverie that white people can have for Asian culture, and it actually makes a lot of Asian people uncomfortable.
See, I would disagree with this one strictly because it wasn't just like, hey, man, I like Asian culture. And it's not like a grab bag of, because usually when you do that, it's like a, all right, so you have Korean, Chinese, Taiwan, Japanese, and all kind of gets thrown in this thing. It's like, yeah, it's Japan. And people from Japan are going, fuck no, it's not.
Like Memories of a Geisha?
Yeah, sure, yes. Yeah, and this one, they did such a good job making this movie Japanese. Mm-hmm. Like, everything about it is so strictly Japanese that I can see where you're coming from. I totally get it.
I'm just trying to think of one of the things that could have held
totally
it back.
Because
there's a lot of people that were angry that they cast all white people for these main roles.
I'm not defending that. I'm saying the look of the film and what's in the movie is all very, very Japanese. And I think they nailed that. I agree with you.
It's marketed.
Not that I'm defending that as a thing, but the only defense I have for that is that because Leica is not a big studio, they can't afford...
Oh, it's totally trying to get name recognition.
Yeah, like, they have to get name actors, and
but
in
the thing
reality,
is that there are
the name actors
some
that they
named Asian
get
people.
Financiers, but so... When you're in development on a film and you have a financier, the financier will literally tell you no for every suggestion they have that doesn't make them money.
Yeah, I mean that's
domestically and internationally.
This is the exact reason why Scarlett Johansson.
Why not John Cho?
Because John Cho is great for us internet fandom, but
right.
Like he's not a U.S. He's not like
no,
not,
I know, but I mean it's an example.
Would likely say no.
Yeah.
I know all your guys' reasoning, and I know how the Hollywood system works because we work in it.
Right.
But
yes.
the matter of fact is when you show this to people, they're not going to give two shits about all your reasons. They're going to get annoyed.
No, well, I know. That's why I'm saying I'm not defending it as a thing. I'm just saying that's why Leica did it. And because if they were a large studio, then sure, like they need to change. But if you're not a large studio, then you don't have the power to
see,
really
and now that's where I disagree because I think the proof's in the pudding and in this situation it didn't make the money.
Yeah,
that's true.
So
yes,
it didn't work. So
yeah.
I get what they're doing and mm-hmm. whatnot, but it clearly didn't work out. But
well,
I mean,
here's
sorry,
a weird element to this, the marketing, you know, with anime movies that kind of poured over or Miyazaki or like, you know, Ghibli films.
Right, yeah.
They all like have American actors, white actors voicing the dubs. And this always felt like the advertising always felt like this is an import movie coming in, even though it is made here. And, you know, like it doesn't feel like how, like, you know, Disney brings in Moana. Well, it's clearly a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're doing justice to the culture. It's like, oh, no, we're bringing this movie in from Japanese culture. Like, we're bringing it over from Japan.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to mean by it looked so authentic.
Yeah, yeah.
That a lot of people will be like, oh, the anime crap. And then they don't
yeah,
go.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, there's kind of this subconscious bias against anime in general that, like, oh, this is so steeped in, like, it must be anime. I guess I'll wait till video until someone. Maybe.
But I think it's a mixture of that and a mixture with, like, the controversy and that sort of stuff. So it's either people assuming that it was anime, they didn't want to see it, assuming that the actors were wrong and they don't want to see it. There's a lot kind of stacked against it. And although I think it's one of the better movies of the year, it was tough to kind of, like, knock down that wall of just, like, they had this negative wall going into it, and it was really tough to push past
it. Yeah, I don't know what they could have done in
their advertising. And then the third factor, which I think is the problem with all Laika movies, is what is that movie?
Yeah.
Even if you watch the trailer for any of their movies, you go, what is that movie about?
But that's one of the reasons I like Laika so much is that they don't have catch-all trailers. They don't have. They never make a trailer that shows you all the plot.
I think that's a very specific thing to a specific group of people. I think most people.
No. A lot of people want to see the plot
trailers
in the trailers.
To market the movie to them so that you say, this is a movie you would enjoy because this is what it's about and this is the kind of thing you like.
Compare it.
But if you don't know what it is, then you don't want
to
go see.
Compare it to Moana that came out. Like, just how they handled the advertisement of that. Like, they made it palatable to anyone.
They also
that's Disney, though.
That's Disney. That's, and the advertisement for that was very cute and plucky. They did not. They made
but
this
the movie
look
didn't
more
match
serious.
The advertisement, like, the movie didn't match the.
It's not cute and plucky.
It's got its edges, but, like, it. These movies kind of did their advertisements different ways, and clearly, like, this just wasn't tracking. Like,
no, but it's tough to compare. I get where you're coming from with comparing.
I'm only
to
comparing
Moana.
On, like,
I get that. But yeah, it's tough to compare, especially with Disney, because, I mean, Disney can pretty much slap anything on the screen right now and it'll make a fuckload of money.
Yeah.
And Laika, clearly...
Disney is Tom
they
Cruise.
They can't, yeah. Fuck Tom Cruise! Sorry.
Tom Cruise, we love you. We'd love to have you on.
But again, it's that subconscious.
We tried to run like you during the relay today. It didn't work.
Tried so hard.
It's that subconscious thing, though. Like, you're thinking, like, when you watch this, you're like, what is this? What?
Yeah,
what? And then with Moana, you get it. With Disney movies, you get it because they manage to visually get you that idea. This is what the movie is going to be. You're going to feel this during the movie. You don't know what you're going to feel during this movie.
No. Like, if you were to show the trailer to somebody, you would never go, oh, so it's about family. Like, it never felt like that. It felt like it was like this cool, like, kid against the elements thing. And that's not what the movie is
about. That is not what it is
about. But that's actually what I was kind of hoping for, which I'll get into.
Yeah. So let's actually, okay. So we've talked about the marketing. Ryan, you didn't say much. Was there anything else that didn't hit you for it?
No.
So let's actually talk about the movie itself. Because I think the movie itself is, as with every Laika movie, significantly better than the marketing.
Yes.
I like pretty much everything about this movie, but let's start with the titular character, Kubo.
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 What's wrong with your eye?
I feel like Kubo is, when we talked about Hero, what was that movie?
Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6.
He's kind of like Hero, where everything terrible just keeps happening to him. Like, you can't just start with terrible things happening and then, like, eventually things get better. It's like, no, terrible things will just continue happening to you.
You will lose
your father, and then you will lose your mother, and then you'll lose them both again.
Yep. And then what you didn't see when the credits were rolling is that he was walking 10 feet, he tripped on a rock and banged his head, and he has a coma. And in his coma, he was dragged down to hell. Like, it's going to keep getting worse for this guy.
I think Kubo, I like him as a hero more than I like Hero.
I'd agree.
I just was comparing the two.
I understand.
Like, in most movies like this, they'll give the child a tragedy that they have to overcome.
Yeah.
And in their cases, they have multiple tragedies that they're overcoming. And they just have to keep their head up and keep going.
That's another thing that I love about
Laika.
But that's,
Kubo just, like, keeps going.
That's what I love about Kubo versus, like, Hero, where Hero is very much like, everything sucks. And he just gets really bitchy.
Well, because Hero's not a Laika character.
True. No. And like, the if I had a kid and I can show them this movie, his upbeat attitude throughout the entire thing is fantastic. Like, all of the odds are stacked against him in the worst way possible, and he stays positive and upbeat, and it doesn't feel false.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's only for the script.
He's
like,
kind
you
of
actually,
a bully, though. He really bullies that one that bird. He bullies the crap out of that bird.
That's true. Well, he's getting to know his magical powers.
Yeah.
But, like, to be able to go through that and then still raise his sword at the very end, like, wow. And you believe it. You buy it. Like, oh, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
He's going to fight back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works the whole way through. Like, I think he's a. We'll get into this later, but ultimately, I do not think this is my favorite Laika movie. I don't think it's a bad movie at all. But I think he's one of my favorite characters. Because as opposed to the other ones, which, I mean, he still is to a degree. But most Laika characters have this element of reactionary to him, and they don't have a lot of, like, forward momentum. And I feel like he is reactionary, but also very forward pushing. So like it is a little bit like Monkey kind of dragging him along of like, this is what we need to go do. But it always kind of feels like he's willing to do all of it.
Oh yeah, and he wants
to
do the mission.
Yeah,
he's solving the problems.
But he's still a kid, so he wants to play. Him.
Yeah, yeah. To what you're both just saying.
Sorry. We agree.
Yeah, no. It's that like he's solving the problems. He's going on the missions. He's willing to do this and is an active participant. Mm-hmm. Whereas like say like Paranorman, the whole time is him just going, "Oh fuck, what's going on? What do I have to fix?" And
oh no, I got what's going on, huh?
Yeah, and I love Paranorman. Yeah. He is a great character in it. But like this, I like action characters. Indeed.
Yeah, I think Kubo and Coraline would get along rather well.
Oh, they totally bang.
Mm-hmm. When they're older.
Is that not what you meant?
But he's supposed to be 11 in this movie. I don't remember how old Coraline's supposed to be.
I think they're both too young to bang.
Yeah.
They're going to be preteen soon. That's about when you start now.
God.
Well, technically, he's a lot older than her.
Coraline?
No, Kubo would be
I guess
older.
Kubo's technically like,
oh, well, yeah.
5,000 years.
A couple
older
centuries
now.
In between.
So it's really gross on Coraline, not on him. Or both. It's fucked up
okay,
either
let's
way. Let's keep talking about this.
Either way, how dare we?
Let's talk about these other characters. I'll start with the one that I like before the one that I don't. I really like Beetle.
Oh, I loved Beetle.
I think Beetle's a lot of fun. It wasn't until the credits came around that I realized it wasn't voiced by Stephen Colbert.
He was the only
has
one
the same
that I picked out right away.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
I was like, that sounds like, oh, but it can't be. Nah. And it
McConaughey.
See, that's what I was doing the whole thing. That sounds like Stephen Colbert. It can't be. He doesn't have time for this. And oh, it's Matthew McConaughey?
Well, that's what I was saying. I was like, this sounds like Matthew McConaughey, but why is he voicing a beetle in a Laika movie?
Okay, go back and rewatch it and think Stephen Colbert. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's like the same inflection.
Yeah.
I do actually think he was the only one that sounded like the actor. The other guys did a really good job. Mm-hmm.
See, I did not feel that Charlize Theron.
See, I have the exact opposite feeling. Oh. That's really funny. I have the opposite. I thought that McConaughey did a better job than Theron.
Yeah, I'm right there with you because there's a ghost.
The ghost of disagreeing.
No, I really thought that Matthew McConaughey did a good job kind of being that character.
Yeah.
And I loved that character. I loved that he's a complete idiot. I loved the whole action sequence, like, which is probably the most beautiful sequence in the movie, when he's underwater and like the big eye monsters are coming to get it, and you think that he's going to get the armor, and then they're like, oh fuck, where'd it go? And then he comes up out of the water with the fish.
Yeah.
I got it.
I totally related to his character so bad in that moment. And like, I couldn't tell you how many times I've gone into a room to do one thing, and then I get distracted and do the other thing, and then leave and go like, oh, I'm wait, I gotta go back.
When you said room, I was so sure you were about to say river. So many times I've dove into a river.
Grab my supplies.
With one task in mind. Yeah.
Luckily, it's never been like,
else.
I have to go save my son. It's never been that dire, but I've definitely done that a lot.
Meanwhile, Brian, you're like, why do we have a river near our apartment?
LA River's dry, man. I don't know what you're diving into. But no, I think he's just a really kind of fun character the whole way through. And like, were you guys surprised that he was the dad? Was that like a left turn for you?
No.
No, yeah. I called both of them right away.
One of the things I didn't like about this movie.
Yeah, we'll get into what I didn't like.
I didn't start to think he was until they are sitting together having the meal on the boat. And he's like,
I knew it was his dad.
And then they start flirting, and then I got weird because I'm like, why is she flirting with this beetle?
Yeah.
Why are they waking up next to each other and like all disheveled? It's like,
well,
what about the fact that
you
knew right away that
when
the monkey
did that
was
happen?
His mom?
The next day, like, that was the dad rolls giveaway. Over on top of her.
That's why I knew it was beetle.
Yeah.
But the reason I knew that that beetle was his dad is because when he was doing the prey thing to the lantern, his dad wasn't appearing.
That too.
So it was very clear, like, your dad's not dead, kid.
Yeah. I said that in that moment.
Well, I didn't realize that until later.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, that must be him because
you weren't praying wrong. He's just not dead.
It actually, the visuals gave it away. The fact that the little figure with the shadow he's casting on the wall looked exactly like Beetle's head.
Yep.
It's another clue.
But here's my thing, is that although I was able to pick all this out, it didn't bother me.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I guess predictable plots are like something that bother me a little bit.
For me, it didn't feel like it was supposed to be not predictable.
Right.
It felt like this is just the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I never felt like it was like, gotcha. It was just kind of like, oh, this is just what's happening now.
Yeah.
I want to be got more.
Well, that works either. Because you don't want it at the end of the movie to be like, oh, and by the way, the whole time it was this. If there's like no supporting evidence for it.
But what if your father's the villain you've been fighting the whole time?
Well, it's his grandfather. So it's
but still that, all in the family.
All,
right?
All of that works into why this is not my favorite Ligon film. Because however much I enjoy the journey, and I think this movie's beautiful and the characters are amusing, it is, to me, predictable. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a great hero's journey. It is a great traditional story beat. Like, with the, like, three tasks to get you to your ending, and then you beat the villain and da-da-da. And
I like those things.
You have a relatively happy
that
ending.
That works for me, yeah.
Even though I don't really... It's a bittersweet ending. Oh, yeah, I do not consider the ending to be very happy. I actually think Kubo becomes kind of a villain. But,
What?
I agree.
I'll argue it, but that's one thing that won't make it my favorite Laika, because that's one of the things I love about Laika is the majority of their movies, when I'm watching them, they're really fresh and new and interesting stories that I've never really seen before, and this one I feel like I had.
I don't think for me this is the first Laika movie that went style over substance. Yes. I think
they definitely wanted to do a very traditional storyline in a very beautiful setting.
I could make the argument this is, might be one of the most well animated films ever.
Oh gosh,
yeah. None of the other Laika movies have done such sweeping is the only word I can think of.
Epic.
It's just sweeping landscapes, beautiful sunrises and sunsets, and water.
There's one problem with that. Like Ryan pointed out to me, that a lot of that is CG.
Yeah, they did do more CG in this than any of the other
that's
ones.
That's kind of annoying.
And the thing, I had that same reaction in the beginning, but at the same time, it's kind of like, well, what do we want?
How giant a warehouse do we want them to have to be able to do all that?
Why don't they just have a real ocean that they
And that's like the fact that they found a way to do claymation water is amazing.
Yeah.
The fact that, if you watch the behind the scenes, you look behind the scenes stuff, like the sets that they built to do these sweeping shots, they're no fucking joke. Like some of the buildings are almost as tall as people. Like they're. Yeah. Huge.
Well, the skeleton is like bigger than life size.
Gigantic. He's gargantuan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like I'm totally fine with them going, all right, well, we're going to do 75% claymation. If it was only 75%, like that's fine. Because like they do big crowd scenes and a lot of the crowd is CG. They're not, they weren't any characters for them. And I kind of, when I first watched them, like, nah, I don't like this. And then it's like, wait, you know, like I want a movie more than I want to be able to say, well, it's 100% claymation. Like I don't need the badge of honor.
That's not that's not the hill I'm willing to die on.
Yeah.
But like you say, like very much like focusing on the style and everything they're putting into it, which I totally can respect and enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. The look of the movie is, it's so good that I'm okay with it.
I mean, the director wrote this, right? This was a kind of a passion project for him.
I believe so. I don't remember. That sounds right. Post fact, it's true.
he put a lot of work into this particular vision of his.
Yes. My biggest takeaway from the movie that I wasn't a big fan of, I did not like the character Monkey at all. And I don't know why. I don't know if it was because that was the only character that I felt had the hoodwink nature to it of.
Yeah. Even though I watched it twice this week, and I still am a little unclear as to why she wouldn't just tell Kubo who she was.
Well, she said because she didn't want to get him too attached to her because she's going to die again.
But then she tells him anyways, and he gets too attached to her and she dies.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's like,
that was an accident.
It's a wet fart, like, is what that is.
But that doesn't make sense because it's like, so he thought his mom was dead already? Or did she want him to believe that his mom was off somewhere waiting for him and then he would later find out that she's not? Like,
yeah, it was kind of a weird, like, hey, your mom's going to have to die twice thing. So she's trying to avoid him having to go through that loss twice, but we all know he's going to figure it out. And then he has to go through it anyways.
Yeah, the character's handled so weird, and just her reveal is kind of abrupt. And, like, even though you know what's going on, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, when they reveal that she's the mother, it's like, why now? And, like, why this? Why the monkey? Why are you so mean? Like there's just nothing to...
She wouldn't have to die twice because he like was not even conscious when the first time that she was like cut down by the sisters.
Right. Yeah.
And then he just wakes up and she's a monkey. So it's like he would still only lose her once. It just I didn't like that.
So the monkey character, I think, is the most poorly handled in the entire movie. That's really why I will go, because I can look at all the other Laika movies and go, I virtually have no problems with these. This one, I have one glaring one, and it's.
Monkey.
Okay.
Monkey.
Gorgeously animated.
It's well, amazingly. Freud says it's always your mother's fault.
There we go.
really fast. Yes. The Travis Knight, the director of this film, this was his directorial debut. He is actually like a CEO, and the film was written by Shannon, or original story by Shannon Tindall, and written by Mark Hames and Chris Butler.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it was quite a few people involved. But I mean, the CEO of Leica, this is his directorial debut.
Explains why I get a little bit more money with it.
Yeah. They got a little more like big epic scale.
But the thing is, I think he did a great job. Like, I think like there's very few things that I can really rip down about the movie, because ultimately I think it's fantastic. Ryan brought up what I think is probably the best thing in the movie, though. Before we sat down, you even had to play along a little bit.
Oh, the music. I mean, the music, specifically the instrument.
Yeah.
That he plays. I loved it.
Yeah, have you never heard it before?
I mean, sure. But, you know, the way that they used it in this movie was my favorite part.
You should really listen to Yoshida Brothers.
Okay.
Yeah, they're great. But I agree. Like, the music in this movie is fantastic. The use of the instrument as, like, an actual story. Like, everything about it was just right. It was fantastic.
And that he can use... I also liked that it could be his weapon, but it's not a weapon. It's just his magic that he can, like, use it for when he's for joy, just to play with origami birds.
And the payoff is
he can use it to solve problems by building a boat, and then he can use it to, like, fight his enemies if he needs to.
And I love that it's the ultimate weapon that he uses against his grandfather.
And it is a shamisen or samisen. It does not have
Samsonite. We are way off.
Samisen.
Yeah.
Also called sangin. It's a Japanese musical instrument derived from the Chinese instrument sangsion. I'm trying real hard to say these. They do not have phonetic on Wikipedia.
You didn't read the most interesting part from the Wikipedia, is that the literal translation is three strings.
Yeah, yeah. Samisen means three strings. Yeah.
So I love that ultimately this armor that he had to pick up, this great and powerful warrior's armor, is bested by that sangsion.
Technically, it was bested by his
magic.
Spirit.
Yeah.
Which comes out in his magic, which he when he learns discipline and can really control it, which is one thing he was being lectured about.
Yes.
Which he never really couldn't control it, but that's a different, like...
I mean, he lost control for that one moment when the paper turned into mosquitoes and tried to attack their mom.
Yeah. He says that.
Yeah.
And he did lose control when he created what I think is the best character in the movie.
The boat?
Nope. The little paper guy.
Yeah, he just kind of comes out.
He's fantastic.
Without him, really none of this movie would have happened.
That's true.
Yeah, they would have been like, where's the armor? Important. I don't know.
Yeah, not really sure. Let's just wander around.
It would have been a very long movie without that little guy.
And when they're telling the story of the real guy and he gets all excited, he's like, me!
Yeah.
That's so good. That's me.
Yep. The amount of character they made into that one little paper guy is so fucking awesome.
I love watching him, like, climb a ladder. It's just this tiny little paper guy. He's like, all right, we got to go back up here. I'm going to climb this ladder.
I was a little sad when I was looking for like things to buy for this movie, and there's no action figures.
Well,
yeah,
it didn't
surprised.
Make any money. Why would they invest in
it's
figures?
True.
As a person who buys all the toys for all the things, this is surprisingly, Leica never has any kind of product placement, which I actually have a really strong feeling is part of their downfall, because... if you're a little kid and you're walking through Toys R Us and you see a character that looks interesting on the shelf, you're going to ask your mom and dad what that is, where it's from, and you want to see it.
They perfected that in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's funny because so many people involved in Leica also helped out with like Nightmare Before Christmas, which
right.
is just
everywhere.
Still a huge thing because of its marketing.
I still
and
buy stuff from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that like it never really went for that.
Right.
It's actually kind of too bad.
I mean, they're a little more
purist.
Me too.
Of a cinema thing. They're very
Which
much
is
the
great.
Art over the money.
And that's
if you want to be a starving artist.
Right.
Yeah,
if you want very
to,
large
if you want to
starving
not be able
artist.
To make art that people see.
Yeah.
Or if you want to not be able to pay your employee. Like,
right, exactly. It's like, do you want people to see your art so you have to make money?
Has paid their employees, right?
They no,
haven't
I,
had
yeah,
any controversy.
Yeah, no,
they're not like Sausage Party.
I'm just saying like the eventual road if by doing, you know, art for art's sake. Because eventually you got to let people go because you got to do it yourself.
Yeah. And because of this one really not making any money, like, are they going to keep getting funded?
Well, they definitely
well,
can't.
I mean,
do
they
the...
still they already have two that they're making.
Right.
So, because they're always they wanted to start doing a yearly schedule. We'll see if that actually happens. But they
I
already
don't know
have
if
the
that's possible.
Well, I mean, their studio apparently is huge.
Yeah. Cuz
they're just always making stuff. Yeah. So,
and
the next one's supposed to come out this fall. We'll see.
They shoot in a cheaper place.
Yeah, they're in Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's possible. I mean, we'll definitely see. I mean, I'll still keep going to see them, but
what are you looking at?
Oh, just my microphone bumped. I'm not sure why.
Oh, it is my foot.
Oh, okay.
No, it's there still the ghost.
The ghost.
Still
the ghost. Yeah. Disagreeing the ghost. With us. They hate like it. Yeah. All right, I think we should move on to the, how Chewie puts it, the bad ending.
It's not bad.
A
bad
Bad
ending.
Guy
what?
Ending.
It's a great
ending.
I mean,
he did, the same, he did the same thing to his grandfather that his grandfather did to his dad. He stripped his grandfather of his soul, essentially. And, I mean, however much you don't like his grandfather, it's kind of like just desserts of, like, you did this to us and tortured us, and now we get to do it to you.
His grandfather was going to destroy the entire town.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not defending. I'm not defending everybody. His grandfather. His grandfather was a terrible person, but I don't know. I think it would have been...
What is he? What's his
so
option?
So what was the other option? To
kill
just
him.
Sacrifice himself and go
kill
to
him.
The star?
Put
to
him
kill
his
grandfather. Because now his grandfather's kind of like his prisoner.
So then it is the same as doing what his grandfather did.
To his dad.
To everybody. Killed him.
And that's... Well, no, because his grandfather didn't kill people. He chained them and made them forget who they are, which is exactly what Kubo does to his grandfather at the end of the movie. It's this really kind of genius thing of like, well, Kubo did it, so it's okay, but... Is it?
We're on Kubo's side.
It's,
well,
no, it's when you do it to good people, it's bad. When you do it to evil people, it's good.
I mean, that's a really poor argument.
But that's
so
why
many
I like
things
the
you could use
like,
that for that
oh,
it's bad.
Well, here's my argument for it. For one, what were his choices? For two, when the grandfather did it, the grandfather hates humanity and. The reason he took away the memories of the father is to torture him because he had love and he had a family and he was happy. And they were like, well, screw you. You're not going to remember any of that. Even when you're with them, you won't remember it. And that's specifically to mess with him. And when he does it to his grandfather, he does it to not because like, oh, I want to take away all your happy memories of murdering people. I want to... give you a new life.
I mean,
let you start.
It's kind of the forgiveness track, isn't it? Like,
I guess
it's a chance for him to do it the way that it should be done. Like,
but
he
didn't
want to
be
like,
forgiven.
But
because
he was given
because
love.
So when he takes away his memories, makes him mortal, and then the guy's like, "Oh, sorry, I don't know who I am. I forgot my story." And then the old lady pops up and she's like, "I'll tell you." And for a second, I think you're kind of supposed to wonder, like, what's she going to say? Like, is she going to say, hey, you're this evil dude who is terrible. Like, get out of here. No, they say, you're so great. You're so kind. You do all these good things. You give money to the poor. Like, you are a wonderful person in the hopes that he will now be this wonderful person if he believes that that is who he is.
And I get that. But at the same time, since we never really get his POV, all we know is that he's the bad guy who attacked his dad. Yeah. We don't know what his world is like. We don't know if he's happy in his world. Maybe he just really wants his grandson in his life. Yeah. Like, he just wants him to be a part of what he considers the heavens, as he refers to it all the time. He never
Join
me in the
heavens. And he views all these things as weaknesses, and he doesn't want them.
Yeah,
and now they just force it upon
him.
He
doesn't want him to die. He wants good things in his point of view for his grandson.
Right. Well, but also in the evidence that we get from the daughters that they... The viewpoint of the people who live in the heavens are that humanity is trash.
True.
So my best analogy for this that would explain my feelings
and
on
that,
it.
And that Kubo could come hang out with him in the heavens, but he doesn't want him to unless he is made into a star person.
We don't know that for sure.
Yes, we do.
Well, he wants to be blind
to
humanity.
He doesn't want to feel love or anything. To come live with us in the stars because in that he can't.
But then he can't get his eye back. So.
But what they're saying is that he can't come unless they do that because they don't want gross human nasties
to come
live in the stars.
Or he's able to be there.
So. I don't think that they're fucking magic. They can do whatever they want. Like, they can come fly around Earth. Like, they can't bring a human back with them. I'm pretty sure they can.
I mean, in a lot of fairy tale sort of stuff, immortals can do things that mortals can't.
But
I interpreted this as the rules of the universe were that. Of course he could, but they don't like, they hate humanity, and they want to turn Kubo into a star god.
Because they love their grandson. They want to be a part of their life.
But then why can't he?
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
They don't love him the way he is.
Okay. My analogy.
Yes.
Is.
This better be good.
when America went, we're going to save the Middle East. We're going to bring them democracy. And then we go in there, we topple all their governments, and we're like, here, this is better. And then they look at us like, what? That's not how we do. I mean, yeah, we don't want fascism and we don't want to be killed, but that's not how we live. It's like the West saying, this is how it should be done. This is better. This is what everyone likes. And then they're left going, no. That's how I feel about the ending of this.
Okay, well, here's
but here the grandfather seems to be fine with it.
Well, because he can't remember anything.
I know.
And he's been stripped of all of his powers.
I'm well aware.
Everything that he was taken away.
I agree. I
all
agree.
Of his murderous despotism was taken away.
This is why.
And that's only for him. It's a tragedy. For him, it's a complete, utter tragedy. He's utterly defeated, and he's molded into the image that he hates.
Yeah, he's defeated and humiliated. So it'd be like if you had a war against cows. At the end of this, not only did you lose your war, now you're a cow.
I was going to say, it's like taking a cow and be like, cow, you are now a chicken. No,
would that make
chicken.
The cows the villains? Because that would probably
story,
be fair.
Yeah.
I mean,
like I would deserve to be a cow if I've been murdering cows my whole life.
It's great for everybody else, but it's terrible for him. That's what I'm saying. It's.
But the argument is like, is that a bad thing? Yeah. He's been a dick his whole life, so okay. So now you're not going to be a dick and enjoy the rest of your life.
He basically gets to live the easy life and be amongst people who love him unconditionally.
Maybe.
And be with his grandson, who he wanted to be a part of.
So he gets to be
and
with
not
him.
His daughters because
he's
going to
be told that he loves,
them.
Even though he'll be like, I don't really remember loving you.
But
at the
end of all this, everything we said, the one thing that I think is the biggest takeaway, especially for Kubo and the Two Strings versus all the other Laika movies, we can actually talk about this ending. Every other Laika
is very clean cut.
It's very cut and dry. Like, oh, that's how it worked out.
Yeah.
Well, because I also think that with this one, they really built up a mythology that isn't really explained, which I think is okay. I'm not complaining that they didn't set up the rules of the universe.
Yeah, I didn't need a Nolan-esque.
Like, even in the beginning, I was like, when he was telling the story with the origami, I was like, wait, is that really happening right now? Is this is he magic? Or is this like...
By the way, that story took all day. From beginning, from dawn to dusk. That's a long story.
That's why the old lady was like, so are you going to finish it this time? Because he never finishes the story.
The whole town's watching the whole time. Nothing's happening in this town when he's telling
the
story.
They would hate the fuck out of this kid. He tells great two-thirds of a story.
He better not tell it every day. This better be like once a week or once a month.
So I think that
their economy is garbage. All day they just stare at this kid telling a story and they don't do business.
But so I think that's why we can't definitively say whether the act at the end is good or evil, because we don't fully know the rules of the universe and the rules of what actually happened when he did that to his grandfather. Like, does he have the power to kill him? Or does he only have the power to defeat the magic and turn him mortal?
Can you just imagine what the rest of the gods are thinking at that moment? That this 11-year-old boy can strip us of our beings and our memories?
Yeah, they better keep out.
And I'm like, they're definitely getting attacked by some other gods.
Those sisters better stay up there, because
the sisters are dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're dead. That's the one thing, another thing I've had many for this movie that I really like is that I like that there's legit consequences, which, I mean, Laika's been very good about from the beginning.
Yeah.
But this one, like, the fact that both
I
of his parents died.
I actually felt bad for the sisters a little bit. I mean, the sisters even say that they acted very mean, but they missed their sister. They say it multiple times. You robbed us of her sister, which is kind of like, and
so we're going to murder you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very extreme response, but it's kind of like,
but again, like, so
from
their
sister
fell in love
with
the guy.
Wizard of Oz to Wicked, like the different points of view and why these things happened.
So they lost their sister because she fell in love with the dude that they were supposed to murder.
True.
It's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet
thing. How
dare
you? We were supposed to kill that dude.
Yeah.
And you done
fucked
up.
Now we're
going to
kill you and your son.
It's like being a...
They
being
weren't
going to
kill
Oh, yeah. They weren't going to kill him.
Fighting for the Americans and then falling in love with a Nazi. That's how it felt in their perspective. Like, she just fell in love with Hitler.
Oh. I don't know that we can really put
I'm doing total devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
With Nazis.
Pretty sure
Nazis
that...
Ryan argued Nazis made everything better last week.
I don't think we can equate Hanzo with Hitler, as he did not exterminate an entire
society. Hey, we don't know. We don't know anything that he did beforehand.
That is true.
They were saying, they said
on
that the
neurologic alone, we don't know the rules.
The heavens don't know, so
saw
to assume
Hanzo,
that he's...
and they said that Hanzo was becoming too powerful. Well, what was he doing that was making him so powerful?
He was slaughtering a whole race.
Yep.
That's maybe. Maybe.
That's why there's only Japanese people in this movie. The rest of the world is dead.
Well, he probably wasn't slaughtering a whole race, but if he was a really
the guy
good
who unified
samurai,
China,
then he probably was slaughtering a whole lot of people.
The guy who unified China and made it what it is today actually slaughtered a whole bunch of people to make that happen.
Well, that's, I mean, the history of Japan as well.
Unified,
the,
eh? Yep.
During the samurai era, they were just killing everybody.
Yeah. Genghis Khan, one of the greatest people to ever, like, be a ruler, but he murdered the fuck out of everyone. So who knows?
Is there anything else that we didn't hit on this thing that we need to? We didn't really talk about the monster designs.
So
I think are great.
Also want to just talk about the themes of like memories and stories as as like being your own humanity and how important that was in this movie.
Well, this movie is very much about heroes to remember, legends never die.
Yeah.
It's very in there of these guys are creating their stories, and they even say, like, my story's ending. Your story's not ending. It's going to live on forever with Kubo and him.
It's a very good movie for, like, dealing with death.
Yeah.
Like, don't, I mean, you should be sad, but don't let it destroy you.
Yeah. But I like the whole story aspect of it. Like, I think it's a little heavy-handed at points, but, I mean, it's a heavy movie.
Like, because, like, the very first line in the movie when he's like, don't blink, not even for a second, oh God, that was gonna be my line. Whatever, I'll pick a different one. And he says, "If you forget any part of this, even for a second, our hero will surely perish." Because it's like if you forget it, then that story is gone, and that person
there's no more
is
story.
Gone.
Yeah, no, I it's a really good through line throughout the whole movie.
Yeah,
it's there's something. Oh, the other thing we didn't mention that I really want to is the monster design. We mentioned very briefly the skeleton and the eye things and.
The eye things are amazing.
Those sisters were terrifying.
Yeah. The sisters were horrifying.
We didn't talk about them. You know, Rooney Mara did the voice, and that's
kind
of what I was
thinking.
Rooney
Mara
at,
did
hear her at
fantastic.
All.
No, she hit herself in the voice perfectly.
Yeah.
Such a good job.
They
those things
scary.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Sisters are why I have friends who have children who have not shown this movie yet.
Yeah. Yep,
that's it's
oh,
just
yeah,
too
yeah.
fucking.
They're very villainy.
Not for
that is the reason why we didn't go see it
and
in the
they're just like floating with their toes dragging across the floor, and it reminded me of in The Craft when
the craft.
Nancy's dragging her toes. Oh, they're so scary witches.
But they're like a force to be reckoned with. Like they're scary fucking things.
They're way scarier than the grandpa.
Yeah, because the grandpa's just a big worm.
Yeah.
No, that was scary too. The dragon?
Yeah, I mean, he's
a dragon.
Kinda,
yeah.
I was, but I didn't.
He kind of looked a lot like from the first Avengers movie.
A little bit. I could see it. But as like a 30-year-old, the sisters made me go, ooh, those are creepy.
Yeah.
The big dragon thing, I was like, that's scary for Kubo.
Obviously, that's a villain. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just a sucker for, you think that's one person. Actually, it's two.
Yeah.
But the reveal sort of thing. I'm always a sucker for that.
I also like the reveal that they're wearing masks. Like
yeah,
when you got
yeah,
that
yeah.
When
he finally
slam
hits
in the face.
One,
yeah.
And she's pissed about it too. She's like,
"That's
you are
also,
not supposed to see my
that's
face."
That's also very Japanese.
I'm an evil goddess. Don't look at my face.
Yeah. The design of all like the bad guys in this movie. I mean, and the good, like, the design of the movie is flawless. The big fucking underwater eye things were
scary.
Gorgeous and scary.
Super creepy.
Yeah.
And if you look up how big they are, they're huge. As the skeleton.
Yeah.
The skeleton
yeah.
is gargantuan. That's the only one they show like in the post credits thing.
That was awesome.
And I mean, I love that they do that because I mean, you can tell it's a little bit of like we put so much work into this. Look at how hard this was to
please
do.
Please look at it.
We wanted to. They're not showing us something
understand
we didn't care about. Understand
our blood and sweat.
But they also like have fun with it too because at the very end when they're showing you how it's made, the skeleton turns on the animator.
Fun. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's so funny.
And they did the same thing with Box Trolls with the two of them talking about like who would waste their time animating this? And it's
like, just that. That must have taken days.
Yeah. But that's my favorite thing about Laika for every single one of the movies is they have a wonderful sense of humor about like everything. And even this movie, and I, even with like how heavy Paranorman gets at points, it's nothing compared to this. This is far and away their heaviest film for all of its three lines. It's a big thing about grief, death, sacrifice, and all these really big, heavy plot points. And it still makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
That's one thing that I'll always love about Laika, as I've stated in past podcasts, that they don't dumb down anything for the kids. Like they trust that the kids can handle this. And all they need you is to trust the kids as much as they trust the kids.
Which is why I'll be very curious to see what their next one looks like. Because they've had two films in a row now where the kids couldn't hack it. Well, or at least the parents didn't think they
could.
Can
the kids hack it or the parents? Kind of like,
yeah.
Well, like what you said. So
Beetle and Monkey had an argument about it, where Monkey's like, no, no, we're not doing this. Too dangerous. And Beetle's like, Kubo seems to be able to handle himself. Yeah. Like, yeah, let him try.
Let your kids get scared.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a child being scared. It's actually a very healthy emotion.
Yeah.
Go read Goosebumps.
or other
That's
books.
The takeaway.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I think we've done pretty much everything we can do on this episode with Kubo. I think it's time to hit up quotes. I'm gonna go first because I don't want anybody to take mine. Because out of the whole movie, McConaughey does a great job, even though I thought it was Stephen Colbert. he's sitting there. He's like, I have a question. If your name is Monkey and mine is Beetle, why isn't he called Boy?
My favorite quote is also from Beetle. But it's from when he's trying to prove his worthiness to come on the quest. And he pulls out his bow and arrow and he starts shooting at the wall. And Monkey's like, oh, yeah, real impressive. You just shot an arrow into a wall. And then he just does the boing, boing, boing of like the arrow into the arrow into the arrow. And he just goes, literally the first time I've ever done that.
Yeah, that's good.
I guess I'll go with the Beetle one, too. He said when they wake up in the morning and he goes, I think I slept on something. Ugh, sword uncomfortable.
Oh, the sword puns were good.
Oh, there's so many great sword
unfindable.
Sword unbreakable. It broke.
Maybe it was just the handle.
Yeah. Oh yeah, another good one. Still gotta find one.
I'm gonna go with what Mackenzie changed from the refrain of the movie. It hooked me in. It opened with this line in narration form, and then it is the first words out of Kubo's mouth when he goes to tell the story in the village. He strums his guitar. I'm gonna call it that because I've got the name already.
Yeah.
And he says, "If you must blink, do it now." It's just a great way to open a story.
It's a good delivery.
Such a performer.
Yeah.
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 The
kid in this is
like, I listened to that kid.
Understand,
like,
oh,
you got
really
my
means.
Attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do I have to not blink while you're telling the story? Because
I didn't. The whole movie, my eyes were so dry.
Yeah, if you had to do that while Kubo was telling the story, you'd
can
be
I get
fucked
some
at the end,
eye drops?
Then he didn't finish the story.
Yeah. Oh, I can't blink for years.
So the the moment I thought was fairly funny is when he's talking about trying to pick up the sword in the hand. He's like, "Don't worry, stealth is my middle name." He's like, "You don't even have a first name."
It's pretty good.
And it's
he gave himself a middle name.
Beetle Stealth.
Okay, so the ending for this, we got to do a review system. Movies with controversial endings. Nice and difficult for our last non-holiday themed episode of 2016. Yep, I can go first. You guys ready for this?
Yeah,
ready.
No Country for Old Men.
This is just like that movie.
It's so much like this movie.
Hmm.
Honestly, my main reason for it is
we
because
we did bring up cows.
The cows. Yep. No, that's it. It's a journey of characters, lots of sacrifice, lots of problems. People live that you were kind of hoping they would. People die you kind of hope they wouldn't. And at the end, the ending is kind of like, oh, shit. That's not how I expected it to go down. Kubo and the Two Strings. Same movie.
Not bad. Not bad.
Okay.
I'll go with... you know, one of my old standbys, Return of the Jedi. It's all about dads and sisters. And I don't know. I'm sure the ending was controversial in the 80s as well. But it, you know, got real controversial when they put in Hayden Christensen.
No. No. Throw you down the chute.
I'm going to go with a weird pick. Arlington Road. In that both had an ending I did not expect. You're thinking like, okay, he's definitely going to kill his grandfather. It's going to be your classic tale. Oh, that took a turn. I did not expect that.
I don't remember Arlington Road.
The
I
good
remember
guy
Tim Robbins
loses
is in
completely.
It, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, that's right. That's
I'm
right.
Going to see if I can get this one to work. All right. I got it. I think.
Ready.
Go.
A Serious Man.
Okay.
It is a movie that is very engrossed in its specific culture.
Nice.
Serious Man is very Jewish. And there's a lot of people that didn't go to it because they're like, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't know. What is it about? Well, it's about being Jewish and having a Jewish family. And in this one, it's being Japanese and having a very Japanese family and, you know, things you got to live up to. and it's got a very controversial ending in the way that you see the kid and you just hear that there's a tornado coming and the kid looks at the tornado and then you cut out. You're like, what happened? What happened after that? Was it happy? Did they get away?
Like
you have no idea.
We have two Coen Brothers movies on this right now.
You watch this whole movie and you have this like journey with this one character about what he's going to do and how he's going to try to be a happy person. And then the movie just cuts out and you're like, is that a happy ending? I have no idea. A serious man.
No. All right. Last but not least.
All right. So I'm going to go with Kingsman. Kingsman.
There we go.
The Secret Service. Because like Kubo, I'm going with Chewie's version of the ending. Like Kubo, you're supporting him. You're like, oh, he's our hero. This is great. He's doing fine. And then at the end, you're like, fuck that guy. Or at least I am.
Why? Because he murdered everybody?
No, because it got really misogynist at the end.
Oh, that's true. That too, yeah.
I did not like that.
That is the weakest part of that movie.
At all.
You're talking about the butthole scene?
The butt sex.
Yeah.
It's a weird turn in that movie.
You take that out of that movie and it's a great movie.
Even the joke, like the first part of the joke, I thought was kind of funny. But then when they went through with it, I was like, that's not funny. Now it's not a joke. Now it's just creepy and
now
gross.
Now it's just a dude going, I can do her in the butt.
So, to bring this episode to a close, coming up next week, we have, what is next week?
Too soon?
Nope.
It's that one that I didn't
see yet.
The night before is next week. Yeah, because I want Christmas. Want to come on Christmas. So next week is The Night Before, the Seth Rogen comedy, and it should be a lot of fun. And the week after that, Mackenzie's actually going to help us out with this. We're going to do our Secret Santa thing, which that's the best way to describe it, is Secret Santa thing.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Secret Thanos. I'm like, what the hell?
Secret Thanos thing.
No spoilers.
Which is, if you weren't paying attention last week or you weren't listening to our battle episode, around the table, we are going to pull names and we are going to secretly pick a movie for someone else to watch. Mackenzie's going to help us out and tell the person what they're watching so that I don't have all the movies spoiled for me, which is usually how this goes down or how this would go down, and I don't want that to happen this time. So thank you to Mackenzie for helping us out with that episode coming up. She says,
you're welcome.
I'm welcome.
We're welcome.
We are all welcome. Okay, so again, quick round of plugs. Check out Angel City Pit online. Check us out online at athpod.com. And that's the only plug I'm going to say, because our website's great and everyone should go to it.
And woo-hoo! Once you do, please follow our link to our iTunes,
yes.
Subscribe, and rate us.
There is also that. I wasn't even going to say that because I'm so excited about the website. That's the only thing I care about right now.
Cool. I got you.
Yep. All right, so thank you again for everybody for coming out.
You're welcome.
And bye!
Bye! Bye.